Welcome to Well-Versed, where we bring biblical principles of governance to governmental leaders and you. This is the Well-Versed Podcast.
Well, we are talking with today on the Well-Versed Podcast with Carla Dean Graves. Carla Dean, you're the first person I've ever met with the first name of Carla Dean. Is there a story behind Carla? Was your mom Carla and your dad Dean, or how did?
No, it was actually the opposite, the other way around. It was my father was Carl and my mother Nadine, and so it was my grandfather. When they found out I was a girl, he said, "Well, let's take Carl, drop the N, and make Carla Dean." So that's what they did.
It's an awesome name. And you have been a physician for quite a number of years in the Kansas City area. You're not originally from Kansas City, but this is where you came in your medical career. Is that right?
That is correct. I finished my residency here at Trinity Lutheran Hospital in Kansas City, Missouri, my family practice residency. And we just stayed afterwards. My husband is an emergency room physician, and he worked at a large trauma hospital here in Kansas City, and he loved trauma. I don't know what that tells me about his personality. He always had a good day if he had some real trauma. And so, whereas I'm just the opposite, I like to sit down and talk with my patients and get to know them and take my time with them. I didn't really find a lot of thrill in putting in chest tubes and cracking chest in the ER. So we had a little bit different view of medicine, but nevertheless, we have weathered it out for well over 40 years.
Congratulations. You rose somehow to a national presence. I don't remember how you and I first met, but I began hearing about you a number of years ago. I can't remember our first conversation. I think probably I first heard your name pertaining to thinking through a strategy on the nationalized medicine that was happening. I think that's probably how we first connected. But you have risen to the levels of even, if I'm not mistaken, are you involved with the protocol for the COVID crisis, even in the Brazilian military? Did I say that right?
Yes, you did. They actually contacted me through a podcast that they saw that I had done with Dr. Jerome Corsi. And they had lost some police officers. And they were concerned about their first responders in their military. And they had heard the protocol that Dr. Zelenko, myself, Dr. Vicky Wool, who's an epidemiologist, as well as Dr. Ryan Cole, he's a pathologist. We sat down and we had done quite a bit of studying for months, actually, because we saw this coming. That is the COVID-19. We saw this coming, and we saw it coming probably in late December, early January. And we thought, oh my goodness, what a way to start off 2020. We knew it was going to be a difficult year because it's a big election year. But we thought, boy, this is going to even make it more complex. And so we began looking at some papers that had presented back in 2005 from what we call SARS-CoV-1. You may have heard of that. And we also went back and did some reviewing on what they call MERS. And we looked at the hydroxychloroquine and how effective it had been in those corona type viruses and the coronaviruses in the past, and how the what the response had been. And so we began putting these protocols together, and we put a protocol together. We had a we also had a biochemist. We had also a neuroscientist that worked with us, and we begin to feel that this would be very advantageous if we could get this information out ahead, if we possibly could, to the American people rather than lagging behind. And so it took some time to actually make sure that, you know, we had studied this efficiently enough. And our first patient that we actually, if you want to say, did this on as a protocol, was a physician actually there in California. And it was an emergency room physician. And if you remember the cruise ship, I think it was a Diamond that, anyway, they brought some very ill patients in, and there was a man that was elderly. He was dying from COVID. In fact, he did die in the emergency room from COVID in the process of being treated right there in the hospital. And it was probably about 3 or 4 days later, and the physician himself began to come down with the virus. And he knew that this is what he had because the symptoms were just textbook. The high fevers, the headaches, the gastrointestinal problems, so on and so forth. And so one of the physicians that we've been working with happened to know him and said, we have a protocol. Are you willing to try this? And he said, yes. And we noticed that within just a matter of hours, he actually physically felt better. But within 3 days, he no longer had a fever. He no longer had any GI symptoms. And he was able to
get it. I'm going to break in. I want to get right back to exactly, remember where you are in that story, because this is extremely important. I want to go back with about three questions, and then we'll jump back to this point. You stated that you saw in late December, early January, how serious what we now call COVID-19, maybe yes, other names at that time. How were you and your colleagues aware that this was more serious than other things we had encountered that were similar to them that have come in various years? That's question number one. Then question number two, how did you sense or know that HCQ, hydroxychloroquine, could actually potentially make a difference on this so early? And then third, the question you may get to, why is giving HCQ, so hydroxychloroquine, why is it so controversial in some circles? Now, that one undoubtedly you would get to anyway, but if we could answer at least the first two of those and maybe the third, then take the story right from where you were.
Well, my point was that we had had some experience prior to Brazilian government contacting me. That's where I was actually going with that. So I'll go back. We have particularly one of our physicians who, let me say this, he has some contacts. And I have to be very sensitive in how I put this. He has some intelligence contacts. And we have, since that time, developed particularly some intelligent contacts through Israel. The Israelis, they, as you well know, and because you've dealt a great deal with Israel, they can't afford to make a mistake. They are very vigilant and accurate, usually in what they are seeing across the world. And we did have some of that information that we were seeing, that I wasn't seeing, but that this particular physician was seeing, and was privy to that information, having a military background. And so we were able to actually see what was happening in Wuhan, and we knew that it did not come from a meat market. We also knew that Fort Detrick had actually been looking at coronavirus. If you go back to the history, you will see that Fort Detrick here in the United States was actually doing some research on bat coronavirus. And if you we all remember correctly, there were also some of the Chinese nationalists who were getting ready to go back to China who were actually caught leaving the country with some virus. If you remember right, one of them from Boston, where the chemist, of course, was arrested because he was actually working with the Chinese. And if you remember, one of his individuals, a national Chinese gentleman, was stopped there in Boston because he had vials in his socks and they had the viruses in them. Now, my question continues to be, and I've never had the answer yet, what viruses was he carrying in his socks? What else was he taking back to China from here in the United States? And who was he working with here in the United States to get those vials back to China? And so we were actually privy to some information that wasn't out there to the general populace. And so we began working on this very early, and I would say especially by mid-January. We had a pretty good idea of what was going to be hitting. And then by March, and then I don't know if your listening audience has heard me speak before, but it was actually this group of individuals that I have been speaking about that we actually put a paper together for President Trump on hydroxychloroquine and the history of hydroxychloroquine and how it works in conjunction with zinc and how it protects the cell from the body's cells from the COVID, the virus, from actually getting into and penetrating through the cellular membrane. It protects it. It almost like a put a coating around it. And so we actually cited some papers and so on and so forth. Well, we had that hand.
The paper got to the president himself. Yeah,
we had it hand delivered.
Was that a factor potentially in him using it prophylactically, or was he already using it at that time?
No, he was not using it at that time. He was not using it at that time. And so we got the paper to him through someone who is very close to him. That's all I'm going to say. They hand delivered that to him. And it was the next day that he actually used what we had put in the paper, that that this could be a game changer. But unfortunately, had we had known that the press was going to politicize this, I think that looking back on it, we may have handled it a bit differently than what our group did, because we handed it to him. The way we were looking at it at the time was, this can give the American people hope that they can actually see that they can get out into the public. We don't have to crash our economy, and we don't have to have all these ventilators. We don't have to have a lot of hospitalizations, and we can actually treat most of this as outpatient. But it completely was turned around by the press.
Would you say that, here's my layman's view of it, correct me if I'm wrong, my view is after about week four, by week five, it was apparent in this. We started March the 15th in the lockdown. By week five, it was pretty apparent that those with underlying symptoms were more vulnerable. Age, and I would qualify as by virtue of my age, if you're overweight, and I unfortunately am, regretfully, I don't have the other underlying symptoms. But if you have one of those five or six symptoms, you perhaps should isolate yourself and be conscientious, but the other 85% or so of the population could have functioned reasonably normally. Many would have gotten it. Very few would have died. And the old herd immunity principle would have actually worked. Am I correct in saying that?
Yes, sir. You are very correct in saying that. And we are seeing that now in the population. This last, just a few days ago, Monday evening, I had a podcast, and I asked one of the speakers to actually show one of our charts, which shows that those countries who have left their society open have had less issues and problems than those who have actually quarantined at such a high level. We know now that this was the wrong thing to do. We kept, our group of core physicians, we kept telling the White House, we kept telling the individuals that you are going to get this. Whoever's going to get it will get it, and whoever won't get it probably won't get it. It's just that if you quarantine everyone, it's going to take a much longer time to actually get this through the populace. We think that at least 85% of our population now has been exposed, and many, many, probably, if they were to do a blood level of their antibodies, they may surprisingly find out that they actually have an antibody called IgG, which means that their body has had it, it's dealt with it, and they are now immune.
Well, let me go back just a little bit. On the why did they politicize hydroxychloroquine so bad? Now, is my understanding, I'm non-medically trained, as you know. My gut feeling is when you have, what little I know, when you have your first symptoms, take the hydroxychloroquine, azithromycin, and over-the-counter zinc. Am I right or wrong in what I've just said?
You are correct to a point. We feel that if you are not running fever, and if you do not have a significant number of comorbidities, which would mean diabetes, which would mean, like, just like you said, the obesity, even sleep apnea is also a comorbidity. If you don't have quite a few of those, then we don't see any reason why you shouldn't just start the hydroxychloroquine and the zinc. Because if the hydroxychloroquine, and let me explain about the zinc just very quickly before I forget, because many people forget the zinc, and it's very vital. Because if you'll notice that most of these studies that have been done, that where the patients are about to die and they give them hydroxychloroquine, they never include zinc. Now, why is the zinc so important? And your listeners need to understand this. The hydroxychloroquine, like I said, forms almost like a coating over a cell. But sometimes there may be an area of the cell that doesn't get completely coated by or protected by the hydroxychloroquine. Zinc normally is very difficult to get into a cell. And so the hydroxychloroquine provides an opening for the zinc to get inside of the cell, not outside of the cell. And what that zinc does, it fools the virus. If any virus sneaks in that the hydroxychloroquine has missed. And what it does is it actually communicates to the virus, hey, I can help you replicate your RNA. And actually what it does, it forms a false RNA, and it dismantles basically the virus so that it can no longer replicate. It doesn't kill it, it just allows it not to replicate. Now, here's what I've always used as an example. Would you rather call the fire department when you have a small fire, maybe in the kitchen that got away from the stove, or do you want to wait and decide to call them after two or three rooms have burned down? When do you call the fire department?
Immediately.
immediately. In medicine, I was trained, of course, I always used to say that I was trained so long ago that we had to write prescriptions and chisel them on stone. But I was trained in a medical environment that the earlier that you treat something, the better your outcome is going to be. Now, if someone today, Pastor, said, Pastor Jim, I think that you may have thyroid cancer. We'll just use that as an example. And you may have a nodule on there that is a thyroid nodule. Would you rather deal with that small nodule, or do you want to have a neck dissection after it spreads? When do you want to treat that cancer? What is the point? What's the point of having a colonoscopy to get a polyp out? What have we always done in medicine? We have always treated early. And the earlier we treat, the better outcome we are going to have. We don't wait to treat these patients when they're ready to go on a ventilator. We want to treat them much earlier, when not only the medicine can be more efficient, but when their own immunity is much stronger. Mm-hmm. Hope that makes sense.
Yeah, well, very much so. Can you go back, the politicizing of HCQ? Why? Why would it be so controversial? This one drug that, as I understand, has been around for 65, maybe 70 years, no serious side effects in particular. So why on earth is this controversial?
Well, it depends upon where your interests are. And I mean financial interest. We have to look at hydroxychloroquine because it was discovered in 1934, actually. And it was used by particularly our military doing the 40s, the mid-40s and on, especially when we sent our military over to malaria areas, whether it be Africa, whether it be, you know, over in the Philippines, wherever it was that they might be serving. And we discovered that this drug is extremely safe. But because it's been around for so many years now, well over 70 years, and it's been used, that it's a generic. And what do I mean by that? Well, that means that there is no longer a higher price that can be paid for the medication, and that it can be made by multiple companies who want to make it. It's available. And it's, by the way, it's not very hard to make either. And so the manufacturing of this medication, if you Google how much does it cost to do a hydroxychloroquine tablet production, per pill, it's approximately 0.05 cents to make it.
Wow.
And so the drug companies, they sell it cheap, or they have sold it cheap until this COVID came along. And some places now are actually charging, the most that I have heard was $25 a pill. That is ridiculous. That is more than price gouging. Some $2 a pill. But until then, this all came about, you could buy months worth of it for basically, at the very, very most, $25 for maybe 90 tablets. And that was at the very most. Most of it was about $10. So it's cheap. It's cheaply made. It's effective. And it's safe. In fact, I want your listeners to know this. Never in the protocols for the rheumatologist, and it's used in rheumatology, it's used in rheumatoid arthritis, it's used It's used in lupus. And the dosage usually is 800 milligrams a day, every day, for the rest of their life. Now, what we have been giving is maybe 400 milligrams for the first 5 days, at the very most, and then one a week. That's how little that we have found is effective. But never has the rheumatology foundations ever required an electrocardiogram or been even worried about getting an EKG or an electrocardiogram to for the possibility of any heart issues. This entire scare, and more people are frightened by the medicine than they are the virus. And this is so wrong. As I called it earlier, it is nefarious as far as we are concerned.
Well, but the answer obviously, quote, big pharma. In other words, people have the chance to make millions, billions of dollars off of a much more expensive drug. And I don't want to sound naive about human nature when I ask this question, but does that mean these people prefer for individuals to die now and get no help so that later when they get their medicine ready, they can clean up on the cash, even at the expense of all the people who died not getting help? Have I overstated it?
No, you have not overstated it. There is a book called Good Intentions, and it's by Bruce Nussbaum. And before we started talking about this book, because it gives the same pattern that Dr. Fauci actually followed in the 90s with the AIDS, with the HIV, because there were physicians then that found out that there were medications already available that could be possibly used to help those with the wasting syndrome of HIV or AIDS. And so they went to him, and he actually withheld those medicines from many individuals who could have, may have, actually benefited from them. And so the very same pattern has been done here, because what they wanted back then was a medication called AZT, and it cost thousands of dollars. And I want your listeners to also realize that Dr. Fauci has patents on certain parts of this virus. And so he actually can benefit financially from the medications like remdesivir being sold. He could possibly, from the vaccine, definitely. And so the vaccines, I want your listeners to be very, very cautious, because if you remember, I just mentioned to you that the IgG, which is the immunoglobulin, the gamma globulin, that shows that you have immunity. You wouldn't need to have a vaccine because your body has already developed natural immunity. In fact, in China, and with the SARS-1 particularly, they tried a vaccine for the coronavirus then, and it killed those individuals because they had been exposed and their bodies reacted very violently to it. We have two different types of vaccines that we can develop. One is an RNA and one is a DNA. And what they're developing now is what we call an RNA. And it cost $4,000 practically per dose. I'm not sure about the number of grams you get for that $4,000. But it's very important for your listeners particularly to understand and know that a RNA vaccine is very unstable. And we have a virus that is very unstable. It's not like the measles or the mumps virus that is stable and that you can actually develop a good vaccine for. It is not like that. It's changing rapidly and it will mutate. And so in order for it not to mutate, and or not the that not, not not the virus, I'm sorry, for the vaccine to be effective, they have to put what they call stabilizers in it. And the FDA has made it so that you do not have to list what those stabilizers are. Now, the problem with the vaccine is that it is grown. You have to have living cells for a virus to grow. And so your listeners need to know that they are grown on augers, such like with monkey kidney, horses, dogs, cats, and even aborted fetal tissue. And so when they get those vaccines, they could have cross reactions with any number of those products that have been placed in those RNA vaccines. If we were to develop a more stable vaccine called a DNA, it's about $10 to actually get that dosage for the vaccine. But we know that it's going to be a high risk vaccination. In fact, those who have now had it, I just briefly looked over an article last night. We have not had any, no animal studies have been done on the vaccine that they're getting ready, that they want released. No animal studies. They have taken it straight to the human being. And we are seeing now that about 20%, according to this article I briefly looked at last night, about 20% of those individuals are coming down very ill.
There are so many questions. I'm not sure which journey, which road to travel right now, because I wish we had about 4 or 5 hours on this. We do know, and I so appreciate the time you've already given, but I want to ask some more questions. I'm going to back up the question when I referenced earlier about the possibility of hydroxychloroquine, and of course zinc. You referenced those two. You did not reference what I thought, I presumed, was an issue to take with them, azithromycin. Am I incorrect that one should or should not include that in the protocol if you test positive for COVID-19?
If you test positive for COVID-19 and you have a high fever, say that you, and what do I mean by high? Well, adults, to me, when you have 101, 102, for a child, that's not that bad. But for an adult, we don't normally go up that high. And so when you have a fever, if you have a bad cough, if you're short of breath, if you have comorbid conditions such as asthma or any other comorbid, then yes, the azithromycin. But personally, and every physician is going to be different. What do they call it? The art of medicine. And I look at the patient. What's going on with the patient? Is the patient actually short of breath? Does the patient have a predisposition for a pneumonia? Have they had pneumonia before? Are they a smoker? I mean, there's just so many factors. And if they seem to be in the very early stages, I want to first see what the, personally, this is my own personal, and I want to see what first the hydroxychloroquine and the zinc will do. And vitamin D, by the way, is extremely important. We need, all of your listeners need to have their vitamin D's checked, and they should run between 50 and 70. 50 would be the lowest, and 70 would be preferable, or maybe even up to 75 or 80. You want to be careful with vitamin D because it can be toxic. But vitamin D is extremely important for our immune system. And we have found Our group has found thus far that no one with a normal vitamin D level has gone on a ventilator. And especially your Black population or your Hispanic, anyone that has more pigmentation of the skin, their vitamin D levels are going to be much lower. They must have their vitamin D level up. The very bare minimum is 50. Now the guidelines from our laboratories say anything 30 or above. No, we need 50 or greater for protection to keep your immune system healthy. But yes, you were correct in what you said. And we have to remember that we can do this. We should never have had to close down like we've closed down. We should have never had our economy shut down like it was. Our schools, children very seldom, if ever, have this type of virus. Our schools shouldn't have had to be closed down. And for heaven's sakes, I think that they're in California. Don't go to the beach with your mask on. Please, don't do it. You are actually harboring more carbon dioxide and you're going to get overheated. You need your oxygen. The air, the heat, the sun, it actually is going to protect you. I see people all the time. I mean, our daughter just went to the beach with her family. And here are these people out there, the sweat just pouring off of them out in the hot sun with a mask on. One of the worst things you could do, and especially if you are a smoker or have asthma or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. I guess Governor Newsom has said that you can't even go out your back door without a mask. Is that correct?
That is correct. Not governor, a dictator, tyrant Newsom is his title. He's also determined, of course, that you cannot have more than 100 maximum in a church, 25% or max or 100, whatever is the lesser. That's all. If you have a church of 10,000, 100 people can come to your services.
Well, what about Walmart? How many does he let in Walmart?
Oh, but Walmart, you see, is covered by the something amendment, apparently, and the church is not covered by the First Amendment, apparently. All the way up to the Supreme Court, by the way, thanks to Chief Justice John Roberts, who did not discover that the First Amendment covered churches and not Costco. I was in Costco the day the announcement came down with people, hundreds of people in there. Some of them kept their distance. Many of them didn't. We were within inches of each other as we went from aisle to aisle. But if the church, of course, somehow COVID is a super spreader once it gets to church, but it's fine if you're a protester or if you're burning and looting. COVID knows to stay away from you. It's really quite amazing how ludicrous and how irrational. I really probed a number of questions and took you off the story you were on, and I promised you we'd get back to the story. It's been so long ago now, you may not remember. You were telling about the story about the doctor, and he was ill with COVID, and you gave him, I believe you treated him.
Yes. Yes, they're in the emergency room, and he did very well. He wanted to go back to work. We were hesitant to have him go back to work because once you've had an illness like this, we like for you to give yourself maybe a week to actually get your immune system back to where it can actually fight again, because it's been fighting hard with the virus if you've once had it, especially if you've had it to any degree.
Do you have a website where all this information or blogs or do you put out a newsletter? You're a wealth of information. Do you have a website we can go to?
I wish I did. I'm in the process of doing that now. Pastor, I have been so busy. I was last night, literally, and I do mean this, literally, at 1 o'clock in the morning, I was texting with the White House on different things that were coming in. I haven't had time to sleep. In fact, my husband reintroduced himself just a few days ago and said, I don't know if you know this or not, but it's been our anniversary. I mean, it has been nonstop. And anyone who wants help or guidance, I have decided that that's what I'm going to do. And I am going to reach out to as many as I possibly can to help them go through this maze that has been made so complex and never should have been. This has been used as a political weapon against our president, against our government. Last year, I did a presentation out in Colorado. And I told the audience then, I said, you wait and see. Are you still there?
I am. We're still okay. Here.
Well, for some reason, okay, there we go. My screen went blank. I said, the communists are going to come in through the medical door. And if we don't pay attention, they will either come through with a Medicare for all or a one-payer system where the government will decide who gets treatment, who doesn't get treatment, what they have, what they're treated with, and for how long they're treated, and so on. They will come through the medical door. And I see this now so clearly that as we were locked down and we couldn't be out in our communities and see what was happening, I truly do believe that those who would take down this country, including our media and all forms of media, and of course, those that are in power, that I see now that they were probably planning these riots. They were actually getting everything solidified because they knew that as the virus would decline, they were going to need to step up their game to take this president down, but to take our freedom away. Pastor, did you ever think that you would see here in this country people actually voting to disband their police forces?
No, this is beyond. Yes, and the irony is, both in Seattle and Minneapolis recently, after they screamed and chanted, defund and dismantle the police, when catastrophes occurred, they called 911. And they cannot make the logical connect of the disconnect in their own minds on the irrationality. This is beyond intellectual explanation of what is
happening. Well, and when it is beyond it, we know that it is nefarious. We know that this is evil. It's just, who are we? We are the church. We are those who stand in the gap, as Ephesians said, stand and do all you can to stand, because people are trying to push us down. And if we do not stand now, then I think that we will be kneeling here on this earth for the rest of our lives to the individuals who want to bring down this country and do away with individual freedom.
You are so right. We're going to, unfortunately, try to end on that note. I'd like to continue on. I know a little bit about the schedule you have the rest of the day.
I do.
And so I've got to let you go and prepare for that. But could you do one more cap off right now? Let's suppose you're talking to a person who does not have COVID or any symptoms. And what would you advise for them as a protocol to follow now, if you're open to doing that? Then after they have serious symptoms, truly serious symptoms, then what? And if you don't mind giving the amounts of what they should take. I think that'd be very helpful to our listeners to hear that. What prophylactically, and then what do they take after they get it, and what kind of dose amounts would you recommend?
Well, we have several protocols out there, and they're used by different physicians. Like I said, depending upon the patient, depending upon the physician's comfort level with that particular individual. But we have been promised by Dr. Fauci and by Bill Gates and by others that we will have a second wave in the fall. That second wave has been predicted according to the intelligence that we have heard from, that it should peak the latter part of September, the first part of October, right around near the election time. And so in order to remain safe, what we have said was that some physicians use hydroxychloroquine, the 200 milligrams. They use that two times a day for 5 days with the zinc. And some use 50 milligrams. Some use 53 times a day for 5 days. And Dr. Zelenko uses 220 milligrams a day for 5 days. And then after that, then we actually would like for the patient to remain on the hydroxychloroquine once a week with, of course, the zinc. Now, as I said, their vitamin D levels are extremely important. And that we're putting out a protocol, and actually, Pastor, if you're going to be on my next Zoom meeting, we're going to be releasing a protocol that will be what I call a naturopath way, because we may not be able to get hydroxychloroquine. None of us may be able to get it if it continues like this. Ohio yesterday pulled it from all of their hospitals. And so if this is going to continue to be a fight to take down Trump and this country, then we were in for a fight and we might not be able to get it. And so we need to have something else available. We need our vitamin C levels. We need no less than 2,000 milligrams of vitamin C every single day. Vitamin C doesn't stay in our system, but maybe 4 to 6 hours, and it's basically metabolized and gone. So we probably should be taking it several times a day. The vitamin D level, you want your level, and you might need to be taking 10,000. You might be so low that you might need to take 50,000 units. And it has to be vitamin D3. Please make note of that. Also, vitamin A is extremely important in this. And you need at least 4,800 milligrams a day of the vitamin A. Vitamin A and D are the only two that you can really, really overdose on. However, you can also overdose on magnesium. Magnesium is important in this. 400 milligrams at least a day. And you want to make sure that when you go to your doctor and you ask for a vitamin D level, a magnesium level, a zinc level, because these are things that are not done in normal blood work, not at all. They have to be specially ordered, and get your vitamin A level as well. So I used to say that to get your antibodies tested. But now that they've got these crazy tracers, that if they turn in your name and that they see that you have had COVID, I don't want anyone knocking on your door and saying, "Hi, I'm here to help you find your way to the government." No, but anyway, if you want to know what it is, make sure that you do it at least an IgG level before you would ever take a vaccination, because it could be deadly for you.
Now, what you've described right here on the vitamin C, the D3, the A, the magnesium, this is all, and HCQ potentially, these are all prophylactic. This is to block you from
getting. Yes. Yes, sir.
Now let's shift, and the person has strong evidence, or has, and in fact, tested positive for COVID, and we're on day one. Now the HCQ continues for the same amount. Is that correct?
No, that is not correct. If you have it, you have a fever, like I said, you have a cough, then you absolutely must have 5 days of the hydroxychloroquine, 400 milligrams two times a day. And you would need the azithromycin 500 milligrams once a day. Or if you have an allergy to azithromycin, or let's say that you may have a heart block, you have a known heart block, and you've had that maybe an intermittent heart block or a first degree heart block, which is not that significant, but it could be if you combine it with the azithromycin and the hydroxychloroquine. Then you can go to a medication called doxycycline. That would be your alternative for the antibiotic so that you wouldn't have to even be worried at all about the QT interval prolongation. And remember, that's usually seen in people who have a long family history of a genetic QT interval prolongation. I get asked these questions all the time. What about atrial fibrillation? You know, and so on and so forth. That's a completely different problem.
When you said the HCQ, 400 milligrams a day times two, so 800 milligrams in the course of a day? So.
Yes, sir. And that would be for 5 days only. You don't want to, and then past that, you could take it again once a week. You don't need high doses of this medication for extended period of time. I mean, my goodness, the VA study, particularly the Brazilian study that they did and that they actually got called out for, it was inhumane. I mean, they should have never given the dosages that they gave of the hydroxychloroquine to those individuals. Hydroxychloroquine has just a little bit of an anticoagulation property to it. And we know that that can be dangerous if they overdo this, which they did. They gave 2 to 3 times a normal dose to those individuals. They, as far as I'm concerned, they killed them.
Oh my goodness. I hate to stop on such a negative note.
Well, all right, hang in there, people. We're going to make it. With the good Lord above, we are going to make it. And that's another thing. I'm going to say, please pray for these doctors who want to treat their individuals, because we are getting chastised. We are getting called up before our boards for reaching out and trying to treat people. So pray for our president. Pray for our freedom. Pray that we can keep our churches, because if they're tearing down statues now, it's not going to be long before they're going to be lassoing crosses off of churches and pulling them down as well. So please pray and ask the Lord to spare us. Thank you.
What you're hearing in Carla Dean Graves is much more than merely a physician. What you're hearing is a prophet of God. You need to listen carefully. This is a woman who sees. She sees what's coming. She makes no claim to be a prophetess, but in fact, she is. And the word, one of the words in the Hebrew for prophet has to do with the word oracle. And it means heavy. There's a weightiness. It's not fun to see what's coming. How many times people who know what's coming wish they didn't, because they sound like Debbie Downers. They sound like glass half full. Not at all. They're giving an accurate report to try to turn the tide and save as many people as possible.
Yes.
Carla Dean, I just have to have you back on, because I want to go a whole different direction and talk about how do we solve the nationalized, socialized medicine crisis that is going on. Our nation is stuck and can't seem to get beyond the controversy. And so I'd like to have you come back on, but I am so immensely grateful for you being on with us. And you must get that website up and running soon.
Maybe between 2 a.m. and 3, I don't know. I'll try.
We got to pray in the right person who will take that project on for you and do it, and a right ghostwriter who will take your material, your teachings, and your lectures and put them into print and get that out in book form or some form as quickly as possible. That's what I pray in your behalf.
Thank you. And I want to thank you and your wife, Rosemary, for all that you do, not only in this country, but abroad, and all that you are doing. Thank you, Father. Thank you. And I ask that he equip you, continue to give you favor, continue to give both of you favor, and to move forward in him and through him. And Father, we just thank you for the opportunity that you have given each of us to serve you above all. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you for listening with the Well-Versed podcast. My name is Jim Garlow. Go to wellversedworld.org, wellversedworld.org. We'll see you at the next podcast. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please read the show notes for additional details if you would like a copy of the book or resources mentioned. Remember that Well-Versed is a 501c3 tax-deductible nonprofit organization. We rely on your support and partnership.
Thank you for listening to the Well-Versed podcast. For more information, please go to www.wellversedworld.org.